It's Thursday, February 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Coming up, will a cessation of hostilities in Syria lead to peace?
We are very cautious about raising expectations on this. The situation on the ground is difficult.
Also ahead, we'll talk the U.S. presidential campaign with Jim Malone. Can President Obama get another justice on the Supreme Court? And there's a new film that marks the 100th anniversary of the national parks. That's all on today's International Edition. U.S. President Barack Obama sounded a cautious note Wednesday on whether the impending ceasefire in Syria will lead to peace talks to end the country's five-year-old civil war. Speaking at the White House after talks with Jordan's King Abdullah, Mr. Obama said there have been modest gains in recent weeks, but the situation on the ground remains difficult.
If over the next several weeks we can see some lessening of the violence that's been racking that country, then that provides us a basis to build a longer-term ceasefire, both in the north and the south, and allows us to move forward on the political transition that ultimately is going to be necessary to bring an end to the civil war in Syria.
Mr. Obama reached agreement earlier this week with Russian President Vladimir Putin on a truce set for Saturday. Though it allows for continued attacks on Islamic State targets and forces fighting for Syria's al-Qaeda affiliate, the al-Nusra Front. But the effectiveness of the cessation of fighting remains in doubt when Syria's main opposition group, the Saudi-backed High Negotiations Committee, has yet to commit to the U.S.-Russian plan. Combatants are required to agree to the cessation of hostilities by noon Friday local time, 12 hours before the truce is set to take effect. For his part, King Abdullah said that he is hopeful that the U.S. talks with Russia will move this process along.
So I'm actually leaving Washington very optimistic about the level of support from the United States, the leadership that the president has shown on the issue of Syria, and hopefully that the discussions between yourselves and the Russians will move the process in the right direction.
Jordan is hosting more than 600,000 of the 4.6 million Syrians who have registered with the United Nations as refugees since the civil war broke out. Also Wednesday, U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry told a congressional hearing here in Washington that the truce is the best path to ending Syria's civil war. But he told lawmakers, "We're not here to absolutely vouch it's going to work." In Moscow, the Kremlin said that President Putin also spoke with Iranian President Hassan Rouhani and Saudi Arabia's King Salman about the impending truce. Its statement said that Putin and Rouhani, who both support the Assad regime in Damascus, stressed the importance of a further cooperation between the two countries in fighting what they called terrorist groups in Syria. Syria's civil war and North Korea will come under close scrutiny for rights violations by the 47-member Human Rights Council during its upcoming four-week session. Lisa Schlein has this preview of the meetings, which start Monday in Geneva.
The 47-member UN Human Rights Council will discuss the records of more than 40 countries. It will examine current developments in Burundi following last year's special session on that country's deteriorating situation. The council also will discuss more than 40 reports on universal themes, including torture, summary executions, forced disappearances, religious freedom, and countering terrorism. Among them, a report by the UN Commission of Inquiry on Syria to be submitted on March 15th. New council president Choi Kyung-nim says he expects a very focused discussion on the human rights conditions in Syria.
Staying focused on the human rights conditions in Syria will also send a very strong message to the people in Syria who are committing these atrocities that their crimes will be eventually accountable in the future.
Ambassador Choi is from South Korea, but assures VOA he will maintain a neutral and impartial stance in all matters, including the examination of North Korea's human rights record.
Like in the case of Syria, we may not be able to see immediate improvement in the human rights conditions in North Korea. But I think it is still very important for the international community to continue to discuss, highlight the terrible human rights situations in North Korea.
Choi says some encouraging signs can be seen in North Korea agreeing to have its human rights record examined under the Council's Universal Periodic Review. In addition, he says talks are underway for a possible visit to North Korea by the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Coming up, President Obama criticizes the Senate over a potential Supreme Court nominee. Donald Trump scores another big win, and other Republicans get nervous. And the U.S. National Park Service celebrates its centennial with a new film. This is VOA.
The news never stops, so keep current on your mobile device with VOA News. Just go to m.voanews.com/English for instant, up-to-the-minute news and entertainment. Check m.voanews.com/English on your handheld device for news as it happens. Stay connected with a fast-changing world with m.voanews.com/English. Do you lead a busy life? Not always able to catch your favorite VOA radio or TV program? If you are keen to stay in touch with world news and events, give VOA Podcasts a try.
VOANews.com.
Visit our website at VOANews.com to learn how you can become a subscriber to VOA Podcasts and keep your life up to date.
VOA News, your trusted source for news and information.
This is VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. President Barack Obama says that his Supreme Court nominee will be someone who grasps the way in which the court's rulings affect the daily lives of Americans. At the White House, Mr. Obama said he plans to fulfill his constitutional mandate to appoint a candidate to replace the late Justice Antonin Scalia, who died earlier this month.
Once I've made a nomination, then Leader McConnell and all the members of the Senate are going to make a decision about how do they fulfill their constitutional responsibilities.
Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and other Republicans have said that they do not plan to approve any nominee until after Obama is out of office next January. The Democratic president said he understands the posture Republicans are taking about the nomination, but it creates an unnecessary political divide.
If, in fact, the Republicans in the Senate take a posture that defies the Constitution, defies logic, is not supported by tradition, simply because of politics, then invariably what you're going to see is a further deterioration in the ability of any president to make any judicial appointments.
Meanwhile, the White House is vetting the background of one possible nominee, Brian Sandoval, a former federal judge who is now the popular Republican governor of the western state of Nevada. Sandoval met with Senate Minority Leader Harry Reid on Monday while the governor was here in Washington for the National Governors Association meeting. A 52-year-old Mexican-American, Sandoval was appointed a judge by President Barack Obama's predecessor, George W. Bush, before being elected governor in 2010. Obama has filled two vacancies on the court with liberal nominees, Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan. Some Republicans say they are determined not to allow the president to fill a third seat that would alter the court's ideological balance. But if Obama's nominee is not confirmed, no one knows who a new president might name. In the meanwhile, the court is divided with 4-4 decisions, and that would let lower court rulings stand, and the high court's decisions would not set a national precedent. Turning now to the people who want to replace Mr. Obama in his job, Republican Donald Trump scored another win Tuesday in the Nevada caucuses, his third victory in a row. Trump took nearly 46% of the votes in Nevada, almost twice as much as second-place finisher Senator Marco Rubio of Florida. Texas Senator Ted Cruz finished third with just over 21% of the vote. Trump told a cheering crowd in Las Vegas that despite establishment predictions otherwise, he is winning over the electorate.
The people of this country are absolutely amazing. I love you folks very much. Remember, make America great again. We're going to do it, and it's going to happen fast. Thank you very much, everybody.
Despite finishing third, Ted Cruz told his followers that he is the only true conservative left in the field.
If you are one of the 65% of Republicans across this country who doesn't think Donald is the best candidate to go head-to-head with Hillary, who believes we do better in elections when we actually nominate a conservative, then the first four states have performed a vital function of narrowing this race and presenting a clear choice.
Ohio Governor John Kasich finished fourth, and retired neurosurgeon Ben Carson finished fifth in Nevada. I spoke with VOA national correspondent Jim Malone about the results and what it means as both the Republicans and the Democrats continue their quest for the White House.
Trump is building momentum. His margin in Nevada was the highest yet of any victory he's had. He's had three in a row. And Trump seems to be expanding his base a little bit. He's not only drawing from non-Christian or non-religious voters who are conservative, but he's cutting into Ted Cruz's base among evangelical voters. So Trump has shown an ability to broaden his base a bit. And the other key remaining contenders, whether it's Marco Rubio or Ted Cruz, seem to be struggling a bit to find out where they would break through. And we will know a lot more about this rather quickly because we have the so-called Super Tuesday coming up in a hurry.
And we've got the Democrats in South Carolina on Saturday, Hillary Clinton taking on Bernie Sanders. Hillary Clinton has a lot of support amongst African Americans. She hosted a forum with some African American women this week. Bernie Sanders, meanwhile, appeals a lot to young people. Is that just going to keep being that tight as we go along?
I think it will be. I think that's the dynamic right now in the Democratic race, and it should give Clinton an edge. Beyond South Carolina on Super Tuesday, March 1st, we have several southern states voting. And it means one thing in the Republican side. It means something else on the Democratic side. And for Democrats, it means a lot of those African-American voters will get out. Clinton has a base of support in that community. It's been a little bit more of a gradual process for Sanders to kind of cut through and win support from them. He continues to rely on that sort of army of young people. The only issue there is that sometimes they're not the most reliable in terms of counting on them to get out and vote. So as we move forward, I think Clinton will do well in the South. But Sanders has the ability to come back a bit in the northern states, states where the younger factor will have more of an impact on the race.
Now, back to the Republicans for just a minute. You mentioned Super Tuesday, which is March the 1st, where 12 states are going to be choosing their candidates, one of which is Virginia in suburban Washington. Another one is Texas. How critical is it for Ted Cruz to take his own state of Texas?
I think it's kind of important because if Cruz can't win anywhere else, if it comes down to a battle between he and Trump in Texas and Cruz can't prevail, I think the questions about whether he should stay in the race will only increase. So that's kind of a must-win for Cruz. And I might say the same thing about Marco Rubio and his home state of Florida, which comes up on March 15th. And the stakes there are even greater because once we get to March 15th, many of the contests on the Republican side will be winner-take-all. So you get all the delegates. And there's a lot of delegates at stake, not only in Florida that day, but also in Ohio. And they're both winner-take-all.
That's VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. You can follow Jim's coverage of the campaign by logging on to our website, voanews.com. Now for a look at how social media is reacting to the presidential campaign, we're joined by G. Abby Lee. Hello, G.
Hi, Dave. So there are two stories related to, you guessed it, Republican frontrunner Donald Trump. The Washington Post speculated Florida Governor Rick Scott as a potential running mate for Trump if he wins the party's nomination, that is. In addition to Scott, the Post also named South Carolina Governor Nikki Haley and former Alaska Governor Sarah Palin. The next story about Trump is a bit scarier. Photos surfaced of two people in KKK clothing in Nevada caucus site. They were holding signs supporting the billionaire contender. The KKK stands for Ku Klux Klan, which advocates white supremacy. They are also anti-immigration, anti-Catholics, anti-Jews, etc.
Yeah, just about anti-everything. Now, moving on to the Democratic side, what is buzzing online as far as Mrs. Clinton and Senator Sanders?
Dave, American cable news channel CNN hosted a town hall Monday night, and clips from the night are making the rounds on the internet. Former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said she'd be happy to disclose a transcript of her paid speeches to Wall Street if everyone does it, including Republican contenders. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, for his part, weighed in and said, verbatim, "Secretary Clinton said, I will do if other people do it. Well, I'm very happy to release all of my paid speeches to Wall Street. Here it is, Chris." And did this hand motion of throwing a stack of transcripts to the MC, CNN anchor Chris Cuomo. He then added, "There are none. I don't do that." So as you can tell, the discussions are getting a bit more colorful as we get closer to the election. Dave?
All right. Thanks a lot, G. If you would like to tweet to G, she is at G Abby Lee. That's JEEABBEYLEE. Our handle here on the program is at @VOA_IE. On Facebook, we're at VOA Asia, and our email is voanews@voanews.com. You're listening to International Edition. This is VOA.
VOA News.
VOA. When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of Press Conference USA, VOA's weekly newsmaker interview program. Listeners around the globe get insights from authors, analysts, and policymakers on a wide range of topics, from U.S. politics and foreign policy to science, culture, and global health. That's Press Conference USA, every Saturday and Sunday on VOA.
You're listening to VOA's International Edition. I'm David Byrd in Washington. For many of us, taking medication can be difficult, either because of stomach troubles with the pills or the pain of injections. But as VOA's Jessica Berman tells us, British researchers have developed a patch that does away with painful side effects.
A clear skin patch called Tepi delivers the painkiller ibuprofen right where it hurts. Pills can cause stomach upset, but not the patch. Scientists at the University of Warwick in England, led by chemist David Haddleton, developed a 5-centimeter square bandage that contains a special polymer adhesive infused with the painkiller.
What we do is dissolve the active, ibuprofen for example, into the adhesive so we can have quite a high loading. So up to 30% of the adhesive will be the ibuprofen. And then when that's placed on the skin, just like an elastoplast, then the drug will actually diffuse across the skin into the body at the site of pain and then relieve the pain in the same way that current creams and gels do.
The ibuprofen patch could deliver uninterrupted pain relief for up to 24 hours. The patch is being manufactured by a bioadhesive company affiliated with the University of Warwick, co-founded by Haddleton and Andrew Lee.
We've only been in the lab about 12 months, but in that 12 months we've essentially assessed about 90% of the drugs that are currently available as either creams or patches. We've tested them in our polymers with very good results.
Almost 24 pain-killing patches are now on the market, but Lee notes they provide soothing warmth to relieve discomfort rather than delivering any active painkiller. Researchers have identified about 20 drugs that could be made into a Tepi patch. But Lee says there are thousands more compounds that could potentially be delivered through the technology. The clear skin patch containing ibuprofen could hit the market in about 3 years to treat pulled muscles, arthritis, and sports injuries. Jessica Berman, VOA News, Washington.
Do you like to take selfies? Well, it turns out they might be useful after all. The credit card company MasterCard says its customers could soon use selfie photos and a fingerprint instead of passwords to make payments online. The company thinks a biometric system that could read a photo of your face would be more secure and could drive sales. Another potential benefit would be to help those in the developing world who might not have government-issued identification. Speaking with CNBC at the Mobile World Congress in Barcelona, the company said biometric security has been used on a trial basis in the United States and in the Netherlands. 100 years ago, some of the most beautiful and pristine landscapes in the United States were at risk of being destroyed by ranchers, loggers, and developers. But thanks to President Theodore Roosevelt and a renowned naturalist, those precious lands were designated as national parks to be protected and preserved for future generations. Now a new film, shot in spectacular IMAX 3D, explores the history of the parks and takes viewers on a scenic journey through some of those breathtaking vistas. Julie Tabo has the story.
These stunning landscapes are among the many natural wonders that can be found in national parks all across America. And they're the subject of a new film, National Parks Adventure.
Maybe we could clear frame.
Shot in IMAX 3D, a team of award-winning filmmakers takes viewers on a stunning visual journey across more than half of America's nearly 60 national parks.
Action, action, action.
Director Greg McGillivray says he wanted to commemorate the park's centennial.
We all felt that it would be a great idea to celebrate that 100 years by paying tribute to the parks that we love in a big adventure film.
And to remind people that they're out there to be enjoyed.
I think what I really want the audience to feel is a certain deal of reverence for the parks.
The film explains how America's national parks were created by President Theodore Roosevelt and naturalist John Muir to protect and preserve the land and the animals that live there.
I'm going back to the earth. I'm going back to the earth.
The story is told through the eyes of three modern-day adventurers as they hike, bike, and explore their way across the majestic parks. Producer Sean McGillivray calls the film a road trip.
It's being able to showcase from Yellowstone to Yosemite, the Grand Canyon, to the Tetons, these amazing places, while connecting them through individual characters.
Greg McGillivray says the parks were a perfect subject for the IMAX 3D format.
Because the audience can feel like they've been there. And so the film really does convey for the audience the best of the parks.
When Roosevelt was 25.
Actor, director, and environmental activist Robert Redford, who narrates the film, agrees.
Because when you go into the national parks, it's a great expanse of nature, and it surrounds you. So IMAX is probably the most logical place to recreate that experience for people who can't go there, haven't been there, and maybe will still go there.
One of my favorite scenes in the film is when we went up to Katmai, Alaska, and filmed bears catching salmon.
In the summertime, when the weather was high,
you feel like you're there. You feel like you're with these bears.
The team endured extreme weather conditions and difficult terrain to capture the amazing sights and sounds of America's natural treasures.
Getting the camera into location for the climbing chutes was pretty challenging, especially on Devil's Tower. It's a sheer cliff, and we had to get the camera above us to get that top-down view of the climbers.
Baby, I've been here before.
The viewer, having seen National Parks Adventure, will hopefully understand the diversity and the breadth of the national park system here in the United States. If they leave with that inspiration, then we'll have accomplished what we set out to do.
Wherever is your heart, I call home. Wherever is your heart, I call.
Tabo, VOA News.
And you can see Julie's report and some of the National Parks film by logging on to our website, voanews.com. That's also where you can leave your comments or ask your questions. And World Football's governing body, FIFA, says it will proceed with an election to pick a new president on Friday to replace the disgraced Sepp Blatter. It will also vote on a set of reforms aimed at restoring its credibility after the worst graft scandal in its history. One candidate had sought to have the vote on a new president delayed, but the sport's highest tribunal threw out his request, clearing the way for FIFA to hold its planned extraordinary Congress in Zurich. FIFA urged members to approve its reforms at the Congress, including term limits for top officials and disclosure of their earnings. It's all aimed at rebuilding trust after several dozen officials were indicted in the United States and a criminal investigation was begun in Switzerland. Sepp Blatter, who is from Switzerland and whose 18-year tenure officially ends this week, had hoped to attend the Congress, but he lost an appeal against his 8-year ban for ethics violations. That means that he has to stay away. And Apple says the FBI has asked it to unlock more than a dozen iPhones in the last 5 months, reinforcing the tech giant's argument that the FBI's request in the San Bernardino massacre case will lead to further demands. In recently unsealed court documents, Apple's lawyers revealed the company received demands to unlock iPhones in California, Illinois, Massachusetts, and Ohio and New York, ranging from iPhone 3s to an iPhone 6 Plus. For more, you can always log on to our website. You've been listening to VOA's International Edition. Tracy Carter directed our program. Dave Magnus was our engineer. I'm David Byrd in Washington. Thank you for listening.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In a recent speech at Stanford University, Assistant Secretary of State for Democracy, Human Rights, and Labor Tom Malinowski spoke of an age-old contest, the struggle between the desire of people to be free, to be treated with dignity, and to have control over their own lives, and the fundamentally authoritarian impulse that believes ordinary men and women are too small-minded to govern their own affairs, the impulse that fuels the dictator's desire to seize and cling to power. Today, the latter impulse, said Assistant Secretary Malinowski, is seen in its most extreme manifestation in ISIL, where terrorists seek to use the veneer of religious legitimacy to justify a thirst for control that includes the desire to kill, rape, and subjugate. But there are other places that reflect the authoritarian urge. Bashar al-Assad's Syria, with its brutal reaction to the aspirations of the Arab Spring. Vladimir Putin's Russia, where human rights organizations are now being vilified as traitors. China, where the government is lashing out at dissidents at home and kidnapping them abroad. But the ardent desire for people to control their own lives is also having its successes, said Mr. Malinowski. In Burma, where the people were able to cast their ballots for elected lawmakers for the first time in decades. In Sri Lanka, where the two communities that had long divided the country, the Sinhalese and Tamils, came together in an election to oust an authoritarian government. The United States, with its own ideals of democracy and the rule of law, has a great stake in the battle that is being waged. So it makes great sense, Mr. Malinowski said, that we defend people around the world who are trying peacefully to advance respect for human rights before conflict between power and people leads to devastating consequences. That we speak out when governments try to stifle dissent or control the internet or pollute their citizens' efforts and aspirations with corruption. Our hopes for the world may not be fully realized, said Assistant Secretary Malinowski, but the world is not falling apart. It is presenting a challenge to which we must rise. And if we keep doing so, I believe things will get better, slowly but surely.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.